Welcome back to another edition of the Off the Crossbar podcast here on ilindoor.com, Inside Lacrosse, and iTunes. As always, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/offthecrossbar. We continue to go around the world of lacrosse, and if you're following me on Twitter, especially on Saturday, you saw me going off about the opening weekend of the NCAA lacrosse season and the play of Victoria's Jesse King. A lot of people were on the Jesse King train after he had an impressive performance in Ohio State's opening weekend loss, a triple overtime thriller to Johns Hopkins. And it was a great game, and one of the people that was kind of weighing in on that game joins us on the show now, a voice of ESPN, NCAA, and many other lacrosse and sports talents. Quint Kestnick joins us on the show. Quint, how are you?
Doing well. Dealing with some massive snowfall here in Baltimore this week and the cleanup associated with that, so I'm a little sore.
Well, last week it was Jake Berge in Philadelphia with the ice storm, and now it's you in Baltimore with the snowstorm. I wish you could come out west where the weather is really nice.
Yeah, I know. I was lucky enough to be out in L.A. and Florida earlier this winter. Unfortunately, I'm here now, and as we continue to push lacrosse closer and closer to New Year's Day, you know, it seems like dealing with the weather.
Is that something
as a coach is part of the struggle?
Yeah, and as a guy who played NCAA lacrosse and knows the perils of dealing with, especially a city that's in a snow belt city of Erie, Pennsylvania, and having to deal with the snow and indoor practices, and that drawing close of moving the year further and further to the start of the season, is that something the NCAA is looking forward to doing, or is that something they want to get away from?
I think there's a sentiment among the coaches now to change things up and maybe move the championship weekend past Memorial Day a week or two and don't start playing games until the last weekend in February. So the season would actually start practice on February 1st.
Yeah.
I think the coaches are now seeing that. You know, academically, it's better for the kids. I think physically, there's a lot of injuries that go on during January practices. And I think from a fan base, you know, six straight years of declining attendance at a championship weekend, there's some thought that maybe getting that away from Memorial Day weekend, put it in a medium-sized stadium and hope to get 35,000 fans for a semi and a final. From my standpoint, I've always felt that we don't get to market our championship game. It's semifinal Saturday, and we got one day to promote a national championship. I'd love to see a week in between. So maybe Memorial Day weekend for me would be the quarterfinals.
Yeah.
You know, bring all the quarterfinal teams to one site and play a bunch of games, maybe have the Division II, III final that weekend. So you still make that a jamboree.
Mm-hmm.
Then come back the following Saturday, you know, at Delaware, let's say, and play your two semifinal games. And come back the following Saturday, the Meadowlands or Philly or New York or Baltimore. And I still think you can get 30,000 for those games. And it gives us a lot more time to promote those marquee games.
It was the first time the NCAA expanded the D2 format and brought a lot more teams into the playoff system. Do you think that worked well for the Division II, sort of the younger brother? Because D1 gets a lot of exposure and so does D3. D2 often was sort of the forgotten brother.
Yeah, you know, I think both the D3 tournament's an amazing tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And both those championship games have always been the best games of that weekend. Just the style of ball they both play. And with expansion of D2 and D3, you know, their brackets are going to continue to have to expand to keep up with the right ratio. And so, you know, those tournaments are they're cool because there's so many teams involved from different regions of the country.
The opening week of NCAA play was this weekend, and we talked about that Ohio State-Johns Hopkins game. What an amazing game to not kick off the year, but to get the hype around this year started.
Yeah, you know, there's something to be said about the time slot. You know, Sunday wasn't much going on. You know, we did a pretty good rating with the game, and the game got better as it went on. It was a hard first half to watch. You know,
yeah.
2-2, neither team could shoot straight. But the game builds, and it seems like social media is so important now to getting eyes on a cool event, you know, and that's what seemed to happen. We got more and more viewers as the game went on, and it had a pretty dramatic finish. It was more tension. You know, it wasn't like an incredible playmaking game. Like,
right.
I can think of the Denver-North Carolina playoff game a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
You know, high scoring. But this game had a lot of tension.
Jesse King had 5-1 and really took that Ohio State team on his back like many people expect him to do. And do you see him as an early front runner for the Thornton Award?
Well, I think he's got to be in the group of the top 5 or top 10,
yeah,
without a question. Now, does he have the supporting cast around him to make a run, to win meaningful games? I think what he did was basically he announced himself as one of the top meetings in the country. and many people had never gotten to see him play. Mm-hmm. I remember last year, Ohio State, when they did beat Towson in the playoffs and then lose to Cornell, it was kind of a crash and burn ending.
Mm-hmm.
But Logan Shuss was the guy,
yeah.
and he was the Robin to Batman. Well, he's taken the back step to back seat to nobody now, and he showed up on the big stage and delivered a great performance. I mean, I watched him in practice at Prior Wednesday, and I knew he was good, but there's just some things he was doing that I'm like, man, this guy could play in Major League Lacrosse or the NLL right now, and he's only a junior.
Yeah.
The hand-eye coordination, the shooting releases left-handed, the pick-and-roll game, understanding spacing and separation, the frame to deal with a defender right on him and create space. And then a little bit of a right hand, and you don't see that. That right-handed goal was just a gorgeous goal.
You don't see that from too many Canadians, but he did happen to grow up in a hotbed of lacrosse in Victoria, watching the Gates and Tommy Maritrick. So he does know a thing or two about rising to the occasion. You mentioned he didn't have the supporting cast around him. How much does that weigh in to the end of the year voting for Player of the Year?
Well, yeah, for Tawarton and Player of the Year, postseason success. They're just so linked. A guy like Rob Pennell making a run. Steele Stanwyck made a run. Ned Crotty made a run into the tournament. Mike Lavelle of Syracuse made runs. So, you got to play deep into May. You basically have to play deep into May. Now, as far as being a first-team All-American or a midfielder of the year,
yeah.
I think the coaches, it's a different kind of voting mindset. And so he's got a really good shot if he can keep the pace up. To put up a 40-goal season plus maybe 30 assists, which would be incredible for a midfielder. Now, it is a challenge. I think Teddy's going to be defenses. They're just going to go early on him.
He's
going to get a pull, and they're going to extend to him, try to stop his momentum, and that double's going to be there right away.
Yeah.
So he'll get a lot of hockey assists, but his overall number is probably going to be impacted by being so good.
Speaking with Quint Kesnich of ESPN here on the Off the Crossbar podcast, you picked Syracuse to win. Is there a reason you find and many people find them to be favorites?
Well, yeah, it's kind of a safe pick right now. I got them number one on my poll. They just return so much on offense.
Yeah.
If they can figure out the face-off situation, keep in mind they also bring back Matt Harris on defense and Brandon Mullins, who didn't play last year.
Mm-hmm.
So I got them number one on my poll. 65% of their offense is back, plus Randy Stass, the JUCO transfer,
yeah.
An indoor guy who's, from what I'm hearing, is as good as any player on that team.
Yep.
I think the immediate challengers are Duke and North Carolina. North Carolina, 70% of their scoring returns. Their defense should be better. I like their transition game. Their goalie now will be a sophomore with some experience. And Duke, of course, the entire attack is back. 5 of 7 defensive starters, and then some young, talented midfielders. Those guys, watching tape today of their game against Jacksonville, starting to see signs that Beamer Class and Miles Jones are going to be premier players. But in the middle of the field, Duke does have some question marks.
We're starting to see, I don't want to call it a golden era of field lacrosse, but we're starting to see a new age of field lacrosse and the style of play. And these athletes are coming in, and you mentioned Jesse King just being a junior and already be considered one of the top players in the entire nation. How impressive is it to see such young, talented players from freshman all the way through competing and making a big impact?
Well, it's interesting. Lacrosse is kind of not, from a goal scorer standpoint, from a catalyst and a playmaker standpoint, it's not really a developmental sport. You think about college football and a lineman. They redshirt. They sit the bench for 2 years. They start as a junior and a senior when they weigh 340 pounds. Lacrosse is not like that. If you're a gifted goal scorer, you're going to find the field early. I mean, look at a guy like Wesley Berg at Denver, immediate success, big numbers. Matt Cavanaugh last year as a freshman for Notre Dame. T.J. Sanders, another Canadian for Penn State, immediate success last year as a freshman. So I think from a goal scorer standpoint, you're either ready right away or it's going to be a challenge. I think the developmental positions are more of your midfield defenders and your close defense.
Yeah, you, if you have natural gifted scoring ability, you're probably going to start right off the hopper. It's that midfield defensive role that you kind of have to adjust to, especially at the NCAA level, that a lot of people have issues with. And a lot of people that have that issues are Canadians. How is the Canadian influence starting to really affect the NCAA game? Because we're seeing more and more guys at the top of the NCAA standings who are from north of the 49.
I think finally, universally, coaches realize that you have to get talent up there.
Yeah.
Because shooting percentage is a huge stat right now in college lacrosse. It's become a possession game. So if you can find a guy who shoots 40% versus an American who's shooting 18%, that is a huge swing. And there's a lot of one-goal games, and so players like that are valuable. We're starting to see offenses cater to them as well, more two-man games. More of the east-west dodging, a little less of the downhill north-south alley dodging when you're taking weak-angle shots. So I think the coaches, a guy like Matt Brown in Denver, is an innovator in that direction, and I think a lot of people are starting to copy what he has done. But, I mean, I remember the first time I played against Team Canada, it was in Vail.
Yeah.
I think it was 1992 or 94, and Johnny Tavares comes out, and the guy's like, well, you know, you've never seen anything like this.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, come on, man. And I played the Gates. I played Maracek.
Yeah.
They're like, no. And I remember the first time he caught the ball was in his stick for like less than a tenth of a second. He took it from his shoulder down to his feet and just ripped one low and pegged the corner. I'm like, oh, no, I've never seen anything like that. So there's a level of goal scoring and shooting acumen that these guys possess that Americans don't.
And that's leading us right into Denver 2014 this year. And the Americans just had their Challenge of Champions down in Florida, and they announced their team through the Lacrosse Network, and they had this big doo-wop. And is this one of the best American teams you've seen put together?
It's a good team. Yeah, it's a good team. I think they're going to be strong on the defensive side. I really was impressed with the way they played team defense in the tryouts. Midfield, you know, they got some dodgers, they got some speed, and they got, you know, a lot of skill on offense. I mean, the question, and we could debate this, Teddy, is, you know, what are the Canadian advantages and what are the American advantages?
Yeah.
You know, historically, the America's had a pretty fast team,
yeah,
and a team that could do well in transition with two-end midfielders. Their close defenders have typically been more experienced in the field game, and that's kind of been their advantage. Now, the Canada is bridging that gap, you know, with guys like Reed Atkin. Obviously, Brody Merrill is a freak of nature himself.
Yeah.
But can they surround Brody with capable defenders? And now they're starting to develop more two-end midfielders, guys like Chad Tutton, who can play offense, play defense. You know, a young guy like we just talked about, Jesse King,
yeah,
you know, Jeremy Noble with Denver. So I'm seeing a more athletic Canadian team in the middle of the field.
It's going to be a fantastic tournament come Denver. Now, it also kind of boils into the world scale of things with the Olympics going on right now. What's going to make it to the Olympics first, box or field lacrosse?
I don't know. I don't know the politics behind it and the money it's going to take to lobby a committee. You know, the Olympics seem to be, you know, from location to sports, it seems to be a really political thing, and I'm not sure what the politics behind getting that done is going to come down to. Something I would love to see would be indoor or outdoor as part of the X Games. You know, the Winter X would have an indoor lacrosse exhibition. The Summer X would have an MLL All-Star game. You know, for some reason, it's been so difficult for those leagues to hook up with someone like that who can give the sport that kind of promotion, and I think that would be a huge positive. It's the same demographic, the kids who like the snowboarding are the same ones who follow indoor lacrosse. The kids who like some of those X Games sports, they're playing lacrosse, and so I just think that's a natural tie-in.
Lacrosse continues to grow both sides of the border by droves. And ESPN just announced their TV schedule for the NCAA and for the MLL is always on ESPN. Why is it that the MLL can be somewhat successful on TV down south, but the NLL can't?
I don't know. I think the MLL, and for my years, you know, back in the day, covering ESPN too, with Leaf and Christy Lee and the great Buffalo Bandits games and the Philadelphia Wings game. Those are some of the most intense competitions that I've ever been to. I think the indoor game is a terrific TV product.
Yeah.
It makes sense. It's easy to follow. It doesn't have the confusing and complicated rules of the field game. There's fewer specialists. It's a format and a field that the viewers can watch. It's high scoring. It's harder hitting. It's got fighting. I mean, it's got everything that you'd want in a TV game. So I'm not sure why it hasn't caught on, because I think it's very, very viewer-friendly.
How much has changed since 1999 when you put on the amazing Baltimore Thunder jersey?
Man, that was, I look back at that. That was one of the most enjoyable things I've ever done.
Yeah.
I'd been a practice player with the team for 2 years, and I remember I just got my ass kicked, and I couldn't catch. I was so used to a goalie.
Yeah.
And, like, something hit me. Like, man, in my last practice, Jeff Clausen, like, drilled me into the boards. I screwed up a drill, and I had, you know, blood coming down my face. And I remember leaving the field. I'm like, I can't go out like this. I got to do better.
Yeah.
So I went to work. I mean, I got much stronger, in good shape. And I spent hours and hours at the wall. So just to be involved with that team, you know, to practice every day with the Gary Gate,
yeah,
to compete in those arenas, to go after ground balls with, you know, with some of those guys up in Canada and have my head taken off. I mean, I would not trade that experience for anything. One of the coolest, and I'm so glad that I sucked it up and tried to compete, because it was a great learning experience and it was a lot of fun.
Did you ever think about playing goal, or were you always just going to play out?
No, I was drafted by the Pittsburgh Crossfire as a goalie.
As a goalie, yeah.
And never even gave it a thought.
Wow.
Never considered.
So you'll play field lacrosse goalie with no pads, but you won't play a box lacrosse goalie with the world's most
padded. I always viewed myself as a little small. I mean, I was a decent street hockey goalie.
Yeah.
Like, the indoor goalies need a frame, and you can pad me up, but I'm still not going to cover very much of that goal. I would not have been any good as a goalie.
You've called many lacrosse games. You talked about your times calling games on ESPN2 with Leaf, who was an amazing advocate for the sport back in his day and still loves the sport and is around the game. But now you've kind of diversified yourself. You've called the NCAA college football, college basketball. You've even called the Derby. How does a guy from Hopkins get to the Kentucky Derby?
Well, that actually involved lacrosse.
Yeah.
Major League Lacrosse. I was flying. I was living in Saratoga, New York during the summer. I was writing for a horse racing paper up there. I've always followed horse racing. And I was flying to MLL games to do TV. And our producer was a guy who worked for Winnercom Productions out of Oklahoma. And they did all a lot of the shows around the Derby.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, what'd you do this week? I'm like, well, I just interviewed Jerry Bailey this morning, and I was talking to Bobby Frankel. I'm doing this piece. He's like, you know horse racing? I'm like, oh, yeah, I know horse racing here. So I showed him all my articles.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, let's see, we'll give you a shot next year on the breakfast show.
Wow.
You know, 6 a.m. on ESPN2, yeah, morning of the Derby. So that's basically how it started. It was just meeting a producer and then convincing him that I knew horse racing. And the same has basically been true for college football.
Yeah.
My dad was a high school football coach. I grew up, I was 6 years old, evaluating tape with my father, charting plays, stealing signals from the other teams, going to practice every day, cleaning out lockers. And, you know, that was my life. And so it was the same deal. It was going to ESPN, folks at ESPN, saying, look, I know football. Just give me a shot. If you don't like me, don't use me.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just relationships, meeting people when you get a chance. You hope you do a good job, and you hope to continue to keep it rolling.
Everyone has sort of a moment in their career that they always look back at and they say, oh my God, that's such an amazing moment, or oh, I wish that wouldn't never happen. Where does the Bo Pelini interview rank?
What was your reaction to the two early interceptions?
Well, what do you think? What kind of questions?
That one, you know, there's a side of me, like, one of my mottos this year became, you know, I'm not going to play softball. I'm a lacrosse player, so I'm not going to duck around issues. I'm going for it.
Yep.
And he was looking for a fight that day. If you watch that game, you know, he got a penalty. He tore into the media. But my question was a little, he could have worked with me. I understand why he didn't. But I think, you know, when we're asking those questions at halftime, there's two things. There's two goals.
Yeah.
Get great content or get great emotion. And there are times you get both.
Mm-hmm.
You get a great answer that gives a viewer insight to what's going on. And there are other times you get great emotion. That was the time that we got emotion. And I think if you're watching that game, all of a sudden the viewer was like, wow, this guy, you know where his mind was that day.
Yeah.
And you know what he was dealing with, around that program. So I think, you know, to capture emotion or capture great content is something that's what I'm trying to get.
And that's ultimately our job as reporters, analysts, interviewers, that we want to make the people or subject that we're interviewing more personable, and to see that emotion allows the viewer to say, hey, that guy's just like me. He can lose his cool on anybody, even if it is the great Quinn Kesnich.
Yeah, well, a week earlier I had a situation with Mark D'Antonio where I asked him about their clock management, and he kind of turned quickly and said, ask me another question. And, well, it was okay, and I went on with the interview, and the next day he called me and apologized.
Wow.
On a Sunday. Called, found, got my cell number, and apologized. We ended up talking for half an hour, and I've always had a great relationship with both him and Bo Pelini.
Amazing.
So, you know, these guys are under a lot of pressure, and it's understood. I think they know that I'm going to ask them a straightforward question, and if they don't want to work with it, that's fine. But that meant a lot, and I have a ton of respect for what Coach D'Antonio has done at Michigan State and the way he conducts himself. You know, a lot of people think he's kind of cold and gray, but he's got a tremendous sense of humor, and he's always been an absolute gentleman and fun for me to work with.
A couple more questions here with Clint Kesnich before we let him go. During that Ohio State-Johns Hopkins game where they were going to overtime, you were kind of verbal about your wishes to see the timeouts reduced in overtime. Is that something that can happen?
I hope it can. You know, it goes back to the Maryland-Virginia 7 overtime game we did, that each team took a timeout in each overtime. So there were 14 timeouts. And the 14 timeouts, there was actually more downtime, basically, in the post game than play. Plus, then you have 2 minutes off in between overtime periods.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just a tremendous amount of downtime. And you know, it's a player's game. And it seems like the more rules we keep putting in it, we're taking the game out of the player's hands and giving it to the coaches. It's a player's game. Let the players decide the game. We don't need a timeout every time someone wins a faceoff. I just think that one timeout for any overtime period is sufficient. Let the players decide the game.
It disrupts the flow.
I think that's why you talk about the Canadian influx. You know, these are kids who have the ball in their stick twice as much as Americans when they're young. They're playing 5-on-5, not 10-on-10.
Yeah.
Double the touches, double the decisions, and the ball's always in play. It's not a coach's game. It's more of a player's game.
In general, who's the best field player right now?
Field player, high school or college?
I guess we could go through all the lists right now, but let's talk college. Who's the best college player right now?
Best college lacrosse player, Lyle Thompson is probably the best college lacrosse player. Albany, put up ridiculous numbers last year, 113 points, I think, almost set the all-time record. It's a team that can score goals. They're fun to watch. He's got a nice combo. A connection with Miles and Ty. He's good. Thomas Schreiber of Princeton's a really good field middie, lefty, righty, passes well. I think he's got like 77 assists from the midfield in his career. He's a guy I like a lot. You know, the guys at Denver are really good players. Jeremy Noble, Wesley Bird, the guys, a bunch of youngsters, Zach Miller, Jack Bobzien, who are fun to watch. And Joey Sankey and Jimmy Bitter, the little Rugrats of Carolina. You got Syracuse. I'm interested to see this guy Randy Staff because I'm hearing
he's legit.
He's very, very good.
Yeah.
And then there's some athletes. You know, a guy like Chris LaPierre of Virginia is a classic field middie. He's kind of a goon. You know, he's going to get ground balls. He's going to run you over. He's going to score in transition. Terrific athlete.
And who wins in Denver, Canada, United States, or can Iroquois pull him off a major upset?
I don't see too many upsets there. It'll be interesting. You know, we were talking about it last week in our coverage. We're going to have all those games in the blue division, the top division.
Yeah, the blue division.
They're going to be on ESPN3, and a bunch are going to be on ESPNU. So, I'm looking forward to getting out there. When is Team Canada going to announce an official roster?
They're probably not going to announce it for at least another couple months. I think they're going to.
What are they down about 40 or so?
Yeah, I think they're about 35, 40 right now. But the thing is, like with the Canadian teams, is it could change from one week to the next. It's just going to be a final decision. They may have one last camp closer to the date, but I really think they either have a list already in mind or they're just going to start drawing names because it's not going to be as in depth as what the Americans did by going down for 3 days in Florida and having this big, build up to the announcement and everything. They're just going to say, okay, here's our team. And that's the way they've always done it.
There's some advantages of going second for them to pick the team second. There's some advantages. There's one issue they have is injuries. NLL and MLL. You know, there'll be a guy or two that gets pinged up. Yeah. And the coaching staff gets to evaluate a whole season of college. So why not put it off?
Quinn, this has been awesome, man. It's been always a pleasure listening to you call the action. It's been a long time dreaming to actually get a chance to chat with you. So thanks for stopping by, and all the best and continued success calling games across the country.
Thanks. It was fun. I appreciate it, Teddy.
The man, the myth, the legend, Quint Kestnick. Again, spent time at Johns Hopkins University, was an All-American goaltender there, broadcast for ESPN and ABC. We'll be doing all the NCAA games and MLL games, and as you heard of me, he's going to be doing a lot of the world games in Denver coming up in May. So Quinn's been around the block. He's seen it all. He's done it all. And for anybody that wants to get in broadcasting, he's a true testament to write what you love and do what you love, and you never know what doors will open. Like, who knew Quint Kestnick was an avid horse racing fan? And next thing you know, he's called the Derby, he's called the Preakness, he's called them all. And he continues to grow his resume of things that he's called, from high school football to men's college basketball and NCAA championships throughout the calendar year. So thanks to Quint for stopping by. Great games on the NLL schedule this weekend. It all starts Friday night with Vancouver and Colorado. Rochester, Toronto, Edmonton, Minnesota, Philadelphia, Buffalo, Vancouver, Calgary on Saturday, and that will wrap up the games. We're pretty much at the halfway point of the NLL season, but there's still more to come, and there's more of this show to come. We'll talk to you same time next week. Tune in to the radio show Saturday morning on Team 1410 or teamradio.ca, streaming around the world. We'll have another fantastic show on Saturday morning, 11 a.m. Pacific time. My name is Teddy Jenner, at Off the Crossbar on Twitter, and we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy the games, and remember, be excellent to each other. That ain't working.